Hey guys, I'm Tawny, founder of Sobriety Tea Party and Readings on Recovery.
And I'm Lisa, author of Girl Walks Out of a Bar. And welcome to our podcast,
Recovery Rocks. We're going to talk to you about everything from recovery to rock and roll to living in New York City.
We're going to talk about how we got sober, why we got sober, and how we stay sober.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Recovery Rocks.
Welcome. I'm Tawny.
I'm Lisa.
We have some guests with us. We have a special episode. This is going to be our season finale.
For season two, yes.
For season two, if you will.
We'll be going on hiatus.
Taking a little break. And with us, we have Ruby Warrington, author of Sober Curious and Material Girl Mystical World. And Dave Starr, heavy metal musician / father of mine.
Sweet father of mine.
Sweet father of mine.
And we still have our live audience.
And we have our live audience, yes. And we're just going to hang out. We just did individual episodes with each of these amazing people. And we just thought it'd be kind of fun for all of us to just riff and shoot the shit and see what comes up.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to ask about, just because it is, you know, Recovery Rocks. Tawny and I frequently talk about the role that music and listening to music and what kind of music plays into our recovery and helps us stay sober. And I was just curious if you sort of had kind of, do you have your sober anthems? Do you have music you stay away from, music you kind of gravitate towards? And does that, how does that factor in with your recovery?
Or if you're not in recovery.
Right. Or just your sober curiosity.
Sober curiosity, yeah. Yes.
I'll take that one first.
Yes, take it, Ruby.
So, I used to love dancing in nightclubs. I was always the girl who'd be like dancing on the speakers, like in front of the whole room, like getting everyone going. And I really, when I contemplated removing alcohol from my life, I was very sad about those, not having those experiences anymore. And I thought that my clubbing days were over. And it's actually in the past year and a half or so that I've rediscovered sober clubbing. And I'm just like, at the age of 42, mind you, and I'm like, oh, it wasn't the alcohol and the getting drunk that was making me feel so good. It was the music. It was the music itself that was getting me high and that was making me feel so alive and that was giving me the tingles. And I'm getting tingles now. I'm talking about it, you know? And it's like, oh, it was the music. And this simultaneously, my husband, when I first met him, was a nightclub promoter and a DJ. And so you can imagine we did a lot of drinking and drugging together. And it was, they were high times. And he recently, in his own sober curiosity, has rediscovered DJing. So we now have decks in our home.
Oh,
wow. And he started making mixes again for the first time in like many, many years. And I know that it's helped him. He's here in the audience and now he's like, I didn't know this was going to be like about me. Thanks. But I think that music, a return to kind of like playing music and enjoying the transcendent properties of music has been something that's helped him and me to find other ways to experience that kind of joy and that euphoria that music can create that we used to think was about the drinking and the drugs. But actually, like I said, it was about the music. Someone asked me the other day, you know, how do I like, I'm fine not drinking during the week, whatever, but like the weekend, I need something to transition from kind of work mode into weekend mode. Mm. Like, what can I do instead of a glass of wine on Friday night to kind of flip into weekend? And I was like, well, I love to put my laptop, like the top of my laptop down, put on some emo music, right? Some emotional music, something
like
that
what artists
feel. I'm not very good at remembering artists. I literally will put on a Spotify playlist of a certain mood and just kind of like whatever the mood is. But I do love dance music. I love electronic music. And I was like, it's funny, isn't it? When I say emo music or emotional music, we automatically often go to sad.
Right.
But
right,
I'm talking about like, I'm talking about music that makes me feel or like changes the way I feel. And for me, it's mainly electronic music, kind of soundscapes. I guess some artists I'm thinking about, there's a guy called Rye X, which is just R-Y-X. We went to see him in concert last weekend. He makes super emotional music, but it's really uplifting and really just like vibey. So yeah, I've rediscovered music as almost like a substance, like a mood altering kind of
substance in itself,
you know? Yeah. So yeah, it's been a really huge part of like rediscovering the joy that I take from music has been really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Papa?
Music and...
Is there any particular music that helps the for you to listen to that is part of the journey?
Well, as we talked about in our last discussion, for me, a lot of my rehabilitation had to, a large part of my rehabilitation revolved around writing music.
Right.
So it was a big part of that whole process for me of going through getting clean and sober and also getting to where I am today. So I'm kind of an unusual musician in that I don't listen to a lot of music.
Hmm.
Most of the time when I'm listening to music is when I'm writing music.
Uh-huh.
And I also don't listen to my own music very often. All the records I've made in my career, I very rarely, I don't know, it's really weird.
Yeah.
To me, music, as a musician, I don't want to A, rest on my laurels, and B, I use the guitar as a tool to help me stay alive, to be creative, and to write music on the guitar.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people say, like, well, when do you listen to music? And I say, well, the only time I really listen to music is when I'm writing and recording.
Making music.
Yeah, because that is 99% of my music listening is when I'm literally, I have a really weird way of writing music. And this is, I don't go into the recording studio and work on music. I never do that. I sit on the couch in the living room, the big screen, flat screen TV, watching horror or sci-fi movies, and I have a guitar in my hand, I got dogs all around me, and I write music while I'm watching Aliens or whatever I choose to watch that night, and I just, the stuff flows out of me. So for me, that's my main... I just don't listen to a lot of music unless it's the music that I'm actually writing and composing.
Mm.
Composing, rather, I guess, a weird way, and that's how I do it, sitting on the couch. I either watch the NFL or horror movies or sci-fi movies that are the main things. I never sit down. I very rarely do I ever sit down with a guitar and say, I'm going to practice this part or I'm going to write a new song. I can't do that. I have to, and also I'm a... I don't know, there's a word for it. It's, what is it, ADT?
ADHD?
I call it HDTV. I'm sitting here watching horror movies, writing music, texting people, and checking my eBay auctions all at the same time, and petting the dogs, and listening to my wife, and so I'm doing 8 things at once. And that's how it's really weird, but that's how I function.
Are you kind of soundtracking what you're watching on TV to an extent?
Well, you know, that brings up an interesting thing, because one of the things my wife and I want to do is get into actually scoring music. Mm-hmm. We have 2 songs coming out. The director, his name is Damiano Cristofaro. He's kind of a weird, hardcore... horror director from Italy, and I
described the genre to me as extreme horror.
It's extreme horror. Some people would not really like it. Some of the stuff I might even like. But I stumbled into meeting him through this Scream Queen actress named Lynn Lowry, who's been around forever. She's done a bunch of movies with David Cronenberg and the Crazies and. God, go look her up, Lynn Lowry. Go look her up on Internet Movie Database. She's got about 170 credits to her name, but she helped hook me up with this guy, this director from Italy. So we have 2 songs coming out in this new horror movie. He doesn't want me to give the title out, but it's starring Lynn Lowry later this year, and that's going to be kind of, we want to get our foot into the writing music for movies. And I do find myself, because I remember I used to think like, well, how do these guys do this? Because it was so foreign to me, but now I find myself sitting and watching movies and I'm sitting there playing the guitar and I'm like, you know, the guy's coming down the hallway with a knife or something. And I'm like, gah, 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 gah. And I'm thinking like, how is this going to translate? You know, maybe I can do this. So,
Well, this gets into something I think I was saying about this emotional music. I think music is a way that we process emotions. Yes. It's a way the way to get emotions out, to have emotional catharsis, is to feel them fully. So actually, like mm-hmm. we were saying, you know, using music as a way to help you feel deeply
yeah.
is a way to process that emotion out of your body. And that's what movie soundtracks are doing. They're bringing the feeling and the emotion of what you're seeing on the screen to life.
Yeah, that's sobriety, too, mm-hmm. is feeling. Like feeling is, mm-hmm. I've been sober since 2015, November 2015, and feelings is still super new for me. And it's like the good, the bad, like, I mean, I don't even like to say good or bad. Feelings just are. They're value neutral. But, and just, I'm able to appreciate music on a different level where there's songs that I grew up loving for 30 years. And then I actually like re-listen to the lyrics with a sober mindset. I'm like, wow, this is horrible.
Yeah.
This is a terrible message. And then there's some music that I've grown to really appreciate in sobriety because I'm in a calmer state of mind, but I mean that I still like rock out to Limp Bizkit more than most people probably listen to Limp Bizkit now. But
we do not just Limp Bizkit.
I love Limp Bizkit.
Yes,
I like.
And you had a repost, right?
Yes, I did, Lisa.
Yeah, she had a brush with greatness on this.
So fun NYC sober thing to do. I think they're popping up in other places. In New York, it's called the Wrecking Room. Where you is that right? Wrecking Room
Club? The Rage Room.
The Wrecking Club. Yes, Rage Room works
too.
Oh my
God. Yes.
But it's the Wrecking Club.
I've never done this.
And you rent out a space and you break shit for either 15 to 30 minutes.
Oh, that's where those photos were.
Yes.
From.
I sent Dad pictures. He's like, what are you
what
doing?
What is going on here?
But you can it's amazing to just break stuff. I mean printers, monitors, anything, dishes.
I hope they get recycled.
They give you, I wonder what they do with it. They give you a sledgehammer and a baseball bat and crowbars, but you also get to make your own playlist.
Oh.
So I took my amazing partner who's here in the audience. I took him, he didn't know what we were doing. I was like, we have a date Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. Wear shoes you don't really care about. I was like, okay. So we get there, and I'm really excited about this playlist it's like all of our favorite, some of our favorite songs. It's like Manson and Limp Bizkit, Rage Against the Machine, System of a Down. And we're just listening to this music blaring while we're smashing printers. And he, at one point, he was like running up, like holding a printer above his head and just throwing it against the wall. And we just like, we had so much fun. Why am I telling this? Because Fred Durst. Okay.
Yeah.
So... I had Nick film the film me smashing a printer while Break Stuff was blaring. That song came out 20 years ago in 99. And as soon as that song came out, I was like, one of my life goals, like bucket list, I've got to smash some shit while listening to Break Stuff. This has to happen in my life. And it did. It finally did. And Nick recorded it. And I posted it on Instagram. And then Fred Durst reposted it. Like Fred Durst, the lead singer of Limp Bizkit, if you don't know. And I was just, it was like one of the greatest moments.
She texted me she messaged me like, this just happened. It was so good. It was so good.
It was amazing.
But it's funny because like that would have never, that kind of, you know, kind of getting stuff out and just throwing stuff against the wall. Like if I... I haven't done it. I intend to do it, but
let's go.
I know, I'll go. I'll totally go. But if I had done that while wasted, it would have been lost on me. Like it would be like, oh, this is fun and whatever.
And dangerous.
And dangerous. But also like I wouldn't have gotten I wouldn't have really done it because I think the catharsis comes in being present and, you know, really like getting that, whatever it is, that emotion out. Like, I noticed I've been recovering from a cold, and I haven't been sort of as, you know, kind of up and down as I usually am and running around. And today when we came here, Tawny had music on in the background, and the first, you know, two of the songs stuck out. She started with Red Hot Chili Peppers, Can't mm-hmm. Stop, which is, you know, I think our fondness for the Red Hot Chili Peppers is known.
We're addicted to the shindig.
We are addicted to the shindig. I wanted to call my book that. Anyway, I did. And
next time.
And also the Rolling Stones' Give Me Shelter, which is my favorite song of all time. And both times that those songs came on, I just found myself literally jumping up and down today, like just jumping up and down. Like clearly I had extra energy and extra whatever, and just the music and having that, you know, it just released what needed to be released. And there's catharsis mm-hmm. in that. And I remember my friends saying, you know, when I first got sober, like, oh, you're not going to be able to go to a concert. You're not going to listen to the Rolling Stones anymore. And I'm like, for a while, I didn't go to a concert for a long time, but I did listen to the Rolling Stones, and I listened in an entirely different way, and I got something entirely different out of it than I did before. And in fact, Tawny and I were supposed to go see the Rolling Stones on June 13th, and unfortunately, Sir Mick
he's in the hospital.
He's not well.
He's not doing well.
So
he'll text us when he's feeling better.
Yes, he will. Get well soon, Mick.
Yes, get well soon, Mick. And I will say one more thing on music. I could talk about this forever, obviously, but music therapy has been a huge part of my recovery. Yeah. I am very grateful to volunteer with this amazing organization called Road Recovery. And with that, it's this amazing New York City nonprofit that helps at-risk youth stay sober through music therapy and writing music, creating music, jamming.
Performing.
Even sometimes just the jamming where, like, with no intention has its own benefit. And so it's been great to be able to connect with people that are involved in this organization. And it's helping my recovery by showing me that I can actually help people with this. And I can actually make music. I didn't know that. I've always been a lifetime music fan and music journalist. And I never thought about making my own. And with this amazing organization, I've been able to dabble in spoken word and do some recordings. And while Dad's in town, we're actually going to go check that out tomorrow, get Dad on a track.
Oh, cool.
I have no idea what I'm getting myself into.
Music therapy is amazing.
Yeah.
Because everything I do is very methodically worked out.
This will be
different.
And this
is something I'm walking into, and I have no idea. I don't know any of these people. I don't know what I'm getting myself into, but we're gonna yeah, except for you.
We've got two in the front row.
Yeah, yeah. I met you two tonight, but awesome. but it's gonna be this. You know, we talked earlier about you can teach old dogs new tricks.
Well, you taught yourself guitar at 44.
Yeah, so tomorrow will be another level of terror for me because I've never done anything like this before. So we'll see how it goes.
Huge growth opportunity then, yes. Right there, coming up.
Right.
Pressure's on. I still don't even know what we're really doing, but we're gonna figure it out.
We're gonna have fun, rock
we're
out.
Gonna, we're gonna write a song.
We're gonna hang out.
We're gonna jam.
We're gonna
Yeah.
Music therapy, man.
Well, they say music can save the world, and it's the universal language. Mm-hmm. And it is true. It is true because no matter, I haven't toured in so long, but in my 500 or 600 shows I did around the world, we sang in English, but we went to 25 different countries where English wasn't the first language, and everybody knew what we were saying.
It is the universal language.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And everybody loves what you're doing, and they learn, you know, the songs, and it's really cool. And because, you know, music is the one language that everyone can relate to, even if you don't necessarily speak the language that the singer is singing.
And while we are on hiatus, I know we both have some travel going on, and I was wondering, Ruby, I know you travel, you've been back and forth a lot. What do you suggest when somebody who maybe is at an earlier point in their sober curious journey, like they're getting ready to go on vacation or they're getting ready to go on a work trip? Are there sort of tips that you, or things to particularly keep in mind when somebody's out and about outside of their immediate comfort zone.
Yeah, it's really easy, isn't it, to kind of construct these routines that almost kind of keep us like, okay, I know what's happening here, I'm safe within these boundaries, and then something comes up where you're kind of like thrown out of that, and like that's when the insecurity can come in, and so the security of I can drink in this situation may leap in, right? I'm going to have that as my crutch kind of thing. I talk a lot in the book about the importance of embracing what I call sober firsts. Yeah. And actually seeing those potentially daunting situations, which are times when you would normally drink, like vacations, like for me, airports on the way to vacations, like, you know, any of these situations where you might have been tempted to drink, or it might have been your default to drink in the past. If one of them comes up, it can be really scary. And you, yeah, it's like, how am I going to manage in this? Mm-hmm. And the first thing is just a mindset shift. It's like, okay, I'm going to actually look forward to this as an opportunity to grow, as an opportunity to prove to myself that I do not need alcohol, as an opportunity to prove to myself that I'm stronger than this substance, that actually I can do this without it. And I'm going to approach it as an experiment in a way, you know?
Yes, yes.
And I think also another really good thing, especially if you think you're going to be around a lot of people who are maybe not on the sobriety path with you, who may be pressuring you to drink. I know that peer pressure is like a huge, huge problem for anyone who's attempting to be sober, no matter how or why they're doing it. But I think just having in your back pocket, like you could, it could literally be written down on a piece of paper that you put in your back pocket, or metaphorically kind of in the back pocket, just all the reasons why you're doing this, whether they're, you know, all the reasons, no labels good, or this is not about good and bad, all just all the reasons, whatever they may be, somewhere to remind yourself like why you're doing this and why it's more important to you to stay sober in these situations than to succumb to a drink or just kind of like go back into the old behavior. I think it's just a really basic but really useful one.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And it you made me think of when you mentioned airports and flying, because I always have likened airport terminals, I always considered them to be just like big bars with really wide hallways. Like that's
it's
like
one of the few places.
One big bar. It's like a casino, right? No clocks on the wall.
Any time of day,
you can drink.
There's people drinking, like nowhere else.
Yeah, no one from Las Vegas.
And I loved that. And you're anonymous, right? You're really like there. You're not. Nobody knows who you are. And one of the things that, just if there's anybody listening who, you know, kind of finds some of that challenging, is especially if you're trying early on, whether you're sober curious or whether you're trying to be abstinent, is this thing that it is a 12-step thing, but I think it applies to anybody. It's something we refer to as HALT, which is don't get hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And if you're any of those four things, then you are in a more vulnerable place, that it's just that much harder to, you know, say no to a drink or something that is convenient. And so I know for me, like, I am the worst. My husband makes me carry snacks in my bag because I'm an absolute monster. He calls them my meltdowns if I'm hungry. So like the first thing I do when I get to the airport is eat. You know, and sit down and eat, and like sleep a must, all of those things. And even if one of those things is happening and I can't sort of stop it in the moment because it's going on, and I can't just leave and go to sleep or something, even just acknowledging like, okay, I feel this way because I'm really tired, or I feel this way because, you know, I'm angry about that thing that happened in the meeting before, and I'm carrying this around with me. Like it helps to think, when you kind of try and think through, like thinking through like, why am I on this journey at all? Why am I taking a decision not to pick up a drink? To think, okay, I know why I'm feeling like I want to shut that down right now.
And I think another really useful one, and I think this is an AA thing, is playing it forward.
Playing the tape through.
That's kind of one of the biggest ones of all, actually.
Huge.
To a point where I was like, okay, I could drink a couple of beers on this plane. And then when I land, I would be feeling kind of groggy. Mm-hmm. And then I'd probably have more when I got to wherever I'm going. And then tomorrow, the first day of my vacation, would be kind of ruined. So, okay, so I'm not going to do that. Like
right.
Just taking the amount of time that it takes to kind of go through those steps.
Yeah.
And actually try and feel in my body, like try and actually make those feelings in my body, that groggy feeling, that kind of heavy feeling I know I'm going to get if I drink, and be like, I don't know, I don't want to feel like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to do that.
Right, right. Because the first one can sound like, oh, it's just a drink. But when I, you know, when play the tape forward,
I know where that drink's going to go. Yeah. And that's not where I want to go. And the time that it takes to play it forward is usually the time that it takes for the craving or the initial kind of like impulse to die away anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a weird experience at the airport in Houston this morning. You were just talking about their like bars.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was walking towards the gate, I checked in. And remember when going to the airport used to be fun?
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Because I don't fly much anymore. And Jesus, it's just like, it's such a headache now. But as I was walking towards my gate at, what was it, 7:30 this morning? There was this, I like had to go like this walking by. This was a full bar and there were guys sitting there and I wanted to vomit. It was I had to like go like this and walk by and just say, it makes me want to heave.
It is one of those places where it is literally okay to be, you know, nobody's going to look sideways, you know. And I always think, you know, maybe that guy just got off a plane all night and whatever. You don't know, like nobody's on real time,
It could be.
Yeah.
But I think it does speak volumes to the idea that we have in our society that if you're not working, then you're drinking. Like those two things go hand in hand. Like you're no longer necessary. You don't have to be on. Oh, okay. So what's the first thing I do? Oh, okay. I drink then. Like we're not, that's just normalized, well, you know, that if you're not working, you're drinking.
I used to, when I would get done with work in the evenings, you know, certainly on a Friday, it was really unfathomable to me, but even on any night of the week, I would walk by on my way from the subway to go to a bar and I would see people sitting in a coffee shop and I'd be like, why would you go to a coffee shop? It's 6 o'clock at night. Like, why aren't you drinking? And then as it progressed for me and I would walk out and I would be just like awful at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning going to work. And I would see people like walking their dogs and stuff. And I would be thinking, well, clearly you don't have to go to work because you're out. So why aren't you drinking? Like, of course, to me, if you could be drinking, you would be drinking. Why wouldn't you? I would
be
drinking.
If you didn't have a reason to be present.
Right. Kind of why would you not be drinking?
Like the same mentality of the why. If I'm out with someone, like I have some friends that still drink and they'll have a glass of wine at dinner and not finish it. And I'm just like, why? What's the point?
Oh, I'll never understand.
Why
that.
Did you get a beer $14 and have four on a drink. Sips of it? Like, you just spent $8 on four sips of beer? Like, why would you do that?
I have never been able to understand the concept of leaving a drink unfinished. It's just not how my brain ever worked.
I'm the same with a plate of food, though. I can't leave a plate of food unfinished. That's something that was just kind of like raised, I suppose.
Same thing.
Clean plates.
Clean plates, give me the guilt. Well, they're starving kids in Africa. Finish your food.
Yeah.
Was that it?
Yeah. That's every time he would say that, so I would eat it.
Well, my dad always used to say, what was it? Take all you want, but eat all you take.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So just don't waste.
It is that thing about don't waste it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, nobody ever had to tell me to finish my plate because I just finished it. It was like, that was non-negotiable. Like, you didn't want to put your hands too close to my plate at any given time.
So that's why you keep snacks in your bag.
I have to have snacks.
I get it now.
I do. I'm a monster.
General population.
I am a monster if I'm hungry. It's so true. So this has been amazing to have you guys with us and to have done everything with the audience here. Thank you so much today.
Thank you guys for having us.
And so we are going to be, Tony and I are going to be taking a break, but while we are on break, please keep in touch with questions, topics, comments, thoughts.
You can catch up.
How long is your break?
We don't know yet.
TBD.
TBD. TBD.
To be determined.
Yes.
But you can listen to seasons 1 through 2 on iTunes and Spotify.
Yeah.
And
Stitcher and Podomatic.
Stitcher and Podomatic. You could follow Lisa at Girl Walks Out.
Yes.
You could follow me at Tawny M. Lara. You could follow Ruby at Ruby Warrington.
And the Numinous.
And the _Numinous. And Ruby has a podcast. What's your podcast
called? My podcast is called The Now Age.
Yes. The Now Age. So there's so much. Listen, and you can listen to Wildstar. on Spotify and iTunes as well. So we all have so much to offer you while we're on this break.
We're also uber productive now. Yes, we don't drink, basically. Very productive now.
And so until next time.
That's it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We would love to hear from you guys. If anybody wants to ask questions, have any discussion, comments, weigh in, you can find me at Girl Walks Out on Twitter, on Instagram, and my website is lisasmithauthor.com.
Yes, and you can find me at Tawny M. Lara, and my website is tawnylara.com. And my blog you can find at sobrietyparty.com.
That's right.
T-E-A.
Party.
I was enunciating the T, Lisa.
All right. We'll see you next time. Thanks.